Does it matter that you're compliant, a word we're hearing a lot at the moment, when others aren't? How do you bring a society together in doing what's right? Of course, I'm talking about COVID-19 here, and we're seeing what's happening in Melbourne with the compulsory face masks, but we're all still being told to socially distance and to be careful, so no handshakes, no hugs outside the family, stay away from gatherings. And depending on where you live in Australia, for example, the number of how many people you can kind of be around varies. But this also applies to other aspects of our lives, such as recycling. So some people do it well, others half-heartedly, even though we all know that we can do it. It's a small part we can play and it makes a difference. So what are the conditions to bring people together to do what's best for all? Joining me to discuss is Professor Jolanda Jetton from the Psychology Department at the University of Queensland. She and her colleagues both in Queensland overseas put together a free booklet called Together Apart, The Psychology of COVID-19. And in New Zealand, I'm joined by Dougal Sutherland from the School of Psychology at Victoria University in Wellington to get his insights into why New Zealand's done so well. And yes, I know, much smaller population. But welcome to you both.
Good morning. Hello, thank Richard. You.
Andy, you say generally we've complied in Australia, so that examples such as hiding in a boot to get across state borders, which came out the other day, is pretty rare. But overall, the research data shows we are more or less doing the right thing.
Yeah, that's correct. I find it quite interesting, the disconnect, really, between what we hear that people want to do and what the media is reporting on. So some of the data that were collected in partnership with the ABC, for instance, they show that people over the last, over the last 13 weeks, the ABC has been collecting data of 2,000 people, asking them on a weekly basis how they experience COVID. So it's questions like, to what extent do you really try hard to maintain 1.5 meter distance? And interestingly, in the first weeks, it was 99% of people who said, yes, I'm really trying very hard to do that. Mm. And at the moment, we still have 95% of people who say that. With some of the other behaviors, we see that people are actually more likely to say, yes, I want to get hand sanitizer, I'm willing to wear a mask. So it's interesting that if we actually look what people say, their intentions are certainly there to be compliant with all the measures.
Yeah, but it seems to me this is a context-dependent thing. So I use public transport. People are really good on public transport in Sydney, in my experience. But in the supermarket, it's like all bets are off.
Yeah, certainly. And it is certainly the case that we are much more attuned to seeing deviants and people who actually break the rules than the 99% of people who are doing the right thing. It's something that we are really sort of tuned into, to see deviants and not so much compliance.
Come to Dougal in a moment. But, you know, the stats coming out of Melbourne about how many people went to work feeling unwell or while they were waiting for test results, pretty alarming. But I guess what we've heard is that isn't about people wanting to be rebels and not comply. It's more about needing to work. How do you apply compliance for the greater good here?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and I do believe indeed that despite the fact that people have good intentions to comply, it's not always possible to do so. With the economy opening up again, many people having to return to work, often have to take public transport, you may find yourself in situations when it's simply not possible to comply. And we also unfortunately see that it is people who have fewer choices in life because they don't have a car, because they have to go to work, they can't work from home, they are the ones who find themselves more often in those situations. So it is very often, I guess, about there needs to be more structure to actually also enable people to do the right thing and to act on their good intentions.
Dougal, if I could bring you in, New Zealand went into a hard lockdown early and, you know, no getting your coffee from the cafe, construction stopped, I think, which it didn't here, businesses closed, everyone stayed at home. Do you know if everyone complied and how quickly?
Um, I don't know the official figures, but anecdotally, I think there's a widespread acceptance that there was very widespread compliance. I did hear a figure the other day on the media that the police are prosecuting something like 1,000 breaches of lockdown during our levels 4 and 3, I think. So that's a relatively small number, I think.
That's a tiny number. There's 5 million of you.
Yeah, I mean that certainly the impression is that everybody complied, particularly in level 4 and level 3. So level 4 was our complete lockdown, and level 3 was slightly looser. Things started to fray a little bit in level 2. But yeah, generally there's the sense that, and there was a real sense of we were all doing this together, that we created an us, and the us was we're going to do this together as a team of 5 million people. We're going to all stay at home for the benefit of other people.
I wonder if that's easier to do when there's 5 million of you than when there's 25 million of you.
Yeah, I suspect you're right. I suspect it is, and I think it's one of the advantages of being in a small island nation, that we, you know, that we have a much more clearly defined sense of us. We don't have any land borders, so there's nobody trying to, you know, sneak over anywhere in a car. So I think it is arguably easy for us to have that sense. But I think that sense of us was also built on, if you think back when we had the Christchurch mosque shootings, there was a real sense, a collective sense of this is not us. This is, and so there was this growing sense, I think, over the past few years, and probably thinking back even in New Zealand's history, this sense of we can do it. We are this small nation. We can all come together. So I think there's always been that sort of sense here in New Zealand, and they were able to build on that for COVID-19.
You write about the reward and punishment scenarios with compliance, and different to what Yolanda has found. You write that as time passes, people's resolution may begin to fray. Do we just get tired of it? Do we kind of think that it's not necessary, or do we forget? And how does reward and punishment come into it?
Well, I think the sense was, and probably better to think about the behavioural terms of reinforcement rather than reward, because reinforcement from a behavioural point of view is the idea that something happens that you get more of this behaviour. And so when we went into lockdown, I think there was a lot of avoidance, and we were trying to avoid COVID-19, and that reinforces the behaviour of staying home, because there was a high level of health anxiety. There were weekly surveys being done here around people's health anxiety, and something like 70 or 80% of people reported being worried about their health. So I think there was a sense of we want to avoid getting sick, which is a form of technically a form of negative reinforcement. But over time, as our numbers started to drop, as we saw a dropping or in a squashing of the flattening of the curve, there became more of a sense here, I think, of people, the contingencies changing really, and people starting to want to escape the boredom of being home. So our fear and our wanting to avoid getting sick, that reduced as we realised actually we think we've got this under control. Yeah. But now it just became kind of, you know, boring being at home. And I think that's too when we saw the economic pressures coming in, people saying, hey, look, I've been off work for 8 or 9 weeks. We can't afford to do this, and we need to get out now.
Yeah, you get the curves of the anxiety and concern and the optimism bias going, they kind of cross over. And you think, well, it won't happen to me because we're sweet. And then it might.
I think so. I think very early on we went into hard lockdown. There were high levels of anxiety here around, about the possibility of getting sick. But then, over time, you know, we only had, you know, some, I can't remember exactly, 1,500 cases in New Zealand. We had in mid-20s number of deaths. So there became a growing sense of, oh, actually, we're probably okay. This is okay. And then other factors started to come in, like I need to work. I need to work to live. I need to get some wages and salary coming in.
Mm. Yolande Yatton, I want to bring you back in. And I want to ask you about nudge theory, which was, of course, made famous 10 or so years ago by a couple of American academics. So this is where it's sort of made easy to do the right thing. Is that being used to try to get people to comply with COVID restrictions at all?
Yeah, sure. I mean, behavioural change is really what we've all been doing, actually, over the last couple of months. We need to sort of change our behaviour in drastic ways to really avoid the spread of the virus. And certainly insights there are useful. One of the thoughts, though, is that in behavioural economics, there's very much a sort of, there's been a bit of an argument that there's behavioural fatigue starting with COVID. That's actually, as I said before, not something that we see in our data. People's intentions to comply are actually very stable across time, have been stable across over the last 3 months. And actually, for some of them, people become more motivated to do the right thing. So what I would actually want to add to that is it's not so much perhaps what people want to do that we need to focus on their intentions, but we need to look at the leadership that actually sort of also harnesses those good intentions. And I guess what I would think is that in New Zealand, with what Dougal was talking about, leaders who consistently talk about we're in this together, it's all about looking after each other, that's I have the impression that leaders in New Zealand have done that a little bit better than here in Australia.
Dougal, would you like to come in on, because that's it does seem that way from this side of the Tasman, that Jacinda Ardern has really led the way.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's been, you know, pretty universal praise for her leadership in this area. And the other person I think that has been really influential here is our Director of Health, Ashley Bloomfield, who in New Zealand during lockdown, we got used to every day tuning in for the 1 o'clock press briefing predominantly with Ashley Bloomfield, but sometimes accompanied by Jacinda. And they would just lay out the facts and the figures of what was going on. But there was a real openness, a real transparency around what is happening in New Zealand. You would hear during lockdown. So you would hear Ashley Bloomfield say, look, I don't have those figures for you, but I will get those figures for you. And because of his background, I think, as in public health himself, there was a high level of trust because he seemed to know he seemed to be competent. He seemed to know what actually he was talking about. And the other thing that was really I think heartening here was our debate on COVID-19, especially early on, was heavily science dominated. We had microbiologists and epidemiologists being household names and well recognized figures here who were talking about the pros and cons and what happens. They were explaining why you needed to wash your hands for 20 seconds, why you shouldn't use a blow dryer on your hands, why you needed to wipe them instead. So there was, I think they did a really great job of making clear to us the rationale for engaging in lockdown and also showing us what to do. I can remember before press briefings, you would see Jacinda Ardern come in, followed by Ashley Bloomfield, and they deliberately stopped and sanitised their hands before coming up.
Yes.
And when they went out again, they would do the same thing. So it became, they were really, I think, you know, normalising and demonstrating, setting up that behaviour that we could all go, oh, this is what you do and this is why you do it.
Yes, and you can see how important that is when your leaders do that modelling. And done empathetically too. I think it's one of the things that's made a huge difference. Thank you very much, both of you, for joining me today.
Thank you.
So that's Dougal Sutherland from Victoria University in Wellington, Yolande Yatton from the University of Queensland. And we put a link to the online book on the psychology of COVID-19. You can also get a hard copy from Amazon.